Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find slightly disturbing. If you are still listening, please take up your protective clothing because shit is now going down.
Welcome to episode 15 of Slaughter. We're right in the middle of the teen years, full Kevin and Perry right now.
I hate everything.
Yeah, this is when we start to turn into bitches.
Yeah. I'm starting today and I am doing the story of Jeremy Bamber. So quite a famous massacre.
Oh.
Just as a heads up.
A massacre.
So Bamber, I'm just going to get straight into it.
Do it.
It's done.
Don't give a shit.
Don't give a damn. Bamber was born the illegitimate son of a vicar's daughter and an army sergeant. I feel like vicar's daughters have got a bit of a reputation.
Standard. So predictable.
Yeah. Like the rebellious daughter. I'm supposed to be the little angel. Nope. She gave the baby up for adoption in 1961 when he was 6 weeks old. So basically like a puppy.
Yeah. I've had you now. That's enough.
Yeah. And he was adopted by Neville and Jean Bamber. So he fell on his feet because they were a really wealthy couple.
Which also happens if you drop a puppy.
Yeah, fall on their feet. Neville was a former RAF pilot. They both lived on a beautiful Georgian farm in Essex. And they'd already had adopted a daughter, Sheila, who was nicknamed Bambi. Because it was Bamber and she was cute and probably couldn't walk very well.
But surely that should have been all of their nicknames.
Yeah, maybe she was just the most unsteady on her feet of all of them.
Maybe it's because her actual mum died and they thought, this is a nice joke.
Maybe. Bamber would put baby rats in his pocket and then ask his mum to put her hand in about age 8. And that was like the first thing I could find out about him. So it's not a good start.
That's creepy. Like, there's no good outcome ever to come from put your hand in my pocket. What is going to be, if it's something nice, get it out yourself. It's like, yeah. My first thoughts would be, you've engineered some weird way of putting your own dick in your pocket.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing boys do.
If someone said, put your hand in my pocket, I'd expect to feel a penis. For sure.
That's just coming from personal experience. Yeah. The rest of you might have different.
Not a baby rat, anyway.
Although sometimes it's hard to tell.
Both children were strictly disciplined. So they kind of... it almost painted like this perfect life that they were on this beautiful farm and they had both been adopted by this wealthy couple. But there was a lot of strict discipline and the parents were devout Christians. Basically, they had a lot of money and they thought, well, we're going to have an easy life. They just sent the kids off to boarding school as soon as they were old enough. And I think this sort of started a bit of resentment from the kids because they kind of thought, and there was a little bit of tension in the relationship anyway. And then they were just like, oh, you've just sent us away. Like, thanks very much.
Yeah. Why go to the effort of adopting if you're going to send them away?
Yeah. But they're at a good school.
Carry on that family name. That's all they cared about.
Yeah.
We need more Bambers.
All the Bambis. Bamber's friend also stated that Bamber was reportedly sexually assaulted at the age of 11. But, I mean, that's basically initiation for boarding school, surely.
Like, almost certainly. If there's one thing I know about boarding school from never having attended, it's that they all are having sex with each other. When I take the children on the residential, when I took the kids on the residential last year, night number one, the girls are snuck into the boys' bedroom. That's one night of being in a boarding situation. If you're there for a whole term, of course they're taking it further. they're escalating.
Yeah, definitely. So Bamba was, so he grew up, obviously, and he got kind of cute. Like, if you look at some pictures, and I know he was...
I am super uncomfortable with the rating of the murderers.
But objectively, he was considered a hottie. Regardless,
is it relevant to the story?
Yes.
Then I shall allow this.
So he did well with both ladies and men. He was a bit of a heartthrob. He was rich. He was quite good looking. And he used the fact that he was from quite a wealthy background as well to charm others.
That's the best way to charm people. The charm is not there at all.
Have a nice face and put money in front of it.
Yeah, just surround your face, like frame it with notes.
You can have like one of those jackets like Michael Barrymore had where he used to run through the audience, everyone to snatch money off it.
Or make like an Elizabethan ruff out of notes.
Maybe he just didn't put it in his pocket, so he just carried
it
on the train.
Put your hand in my pocket.
He left school with no qualifications. He was good looking and rich.
Didn't need him.
Don't need him. Apparently his dad wasn't happy about that, but he did attend sick form and reset his O levels as they were then, and he got 7.
Well done.
Good job. He finished school and then he took a gap year. So he went to Australia, a gap year, and he went to Australia and New Zealand on his father's money. And he basically lived a bit of the playboy life, did scuba diving course, but partied.
Shaved a dolphin.
Possibly. Swam a dolphin, shagged a dolphin. Reportedly broke into a jewellery shop and stole 2 designer watches, which is weird because he was very rich, taking them with him back to the UK. So that's the first time we see a little bit of sort of breaking the law rebellion from him.
And for a lot of the killers, that's actually a little bit older than normal. Like a lot of this, like, especially the, I suppose, normally the serial killers that we look at, they see from quite an early age that they're
Patrick
involved
McKay.
In petty crime.
Yeah, he was in prison at 11. He also claimed to have smuggled heroin, but, I mean, no, there's no evidence for that.
Who hasn't?
When he got back to the UK, he worked in bars and restaurants, which was weird because he had all this money, and I think basically what happened was his dad kind of said, right, go out and get a job, like, go and sort yourself out. And for a short time, he was waitering in the Little Chef on the A12.
Nice.
I mean, if there's ever a job that's going to put you off working for your entire life. So it wasn't long after this that he was like, yeah, I'm going to go work on my dad's farm.
Shoveling shit with your own dad is better than a Little Chef. Shoveling shit with your own dad is better than eating at a Little Chef.
I went to a Little Chef a while ago, and I think they had just like a big, massive jug of water, Oh no, they had the teaspoons just left in like a little pot with water in.
Yeah, cleaning it.
No, it's gross. So people getting their tea bags out of their cup.
Yeah, diddle it
in a little water pot.
Yeah, give it a little diddle. It's good to go again.
No. Not okay.
Don't underestimate the diddle.
And they all freaking do that in Corby as well, and it's not okay. The little...
Corby's not okay, is it though?
Teaspoons and water, not okay.
Like if someone lives in Corby, like, oh, are you all right?
Yeah, I know. Who lives in Corby? He didn't earn much on the farm, but he did live rent-free in a nearby cottage. And if you think, he could have been an Airbnb in that shit and make loads of money. So it's quite nice of his dad to kind of let him stay there. And he's also given a nice car. At the same time, Bambi, Sheila Bamba, she got hot as well. Like, she was super attractive. And
they're gonna start fucking, aren't they?
No.
Why do you keep talking about the brother and sister being hot then?
Well, they just, it's like...
You're leading me down a path of incest. That's where you're taking me.
One.
It's definitely you and not me that is inciting this.
No. One, they're adopted brother
exactly.
and sister. That's fine anyway, but they didn't shag. 2, you adopt 2 kids. What are the chances they're both going to be fit?
Exactly.
Like, those are not good
These
odds.
Are perfect coincidences for some sibling love.
So Sheila Bamba was also attractive. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because she started working as a model. Okay. I'm not just trying to like...
A real model or a Little Chef model.
A real model. So I think she did okay. Her parents paid for... her adoptive parents paid for a London flat, and she started modelling, and she got sent to sort of Paris and Japan. She travelled the world a bit, but she really wanted to make it big. But she was partying, she was spending a lot of money, and she was making money, but she wasn't making like shitloads of money. So she was a little bit disappointed. So she got married. Now, when I first heard that, I was like, well, obviously she married someone rich then instead. No, she married a penniless artist.
Oh.
She just got married to this guy and got pregnant and had twin boys. And her marriage just didn't last, and she became quite depressed because, you know, twin boys, stretch marks, modelling's over.
The stretch marks won't be on her face, though.
That's true. She'll be a face model. So her mental health...
Like, there's not many people that are, like, a cervix model. Like, I think it's fine to have kids and get back into it.
She was... her mental health deteriorated after the breakup of her marriage, and she was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and she had delusions of her children being of the devil, which, some fucking kids...
Sometimes it's true.
Sometimes they are. She moved back in with her parents for support, and so did the twins. So they moved back to Essex, back to the farmhouse, lived with... what's his name and what's her name?
Neville.
Neville and June. Neville and June. Bamber resented the fact he was working on the farm. He was like, she's been fucking living the life. Now she's...
Oh yeah, she's living the life. She's got two devil children and her career's over. She's doing brilliantly.
But then now she's not working because she's got these two kids. And he's just like, why am I slaving away on this shit farm when I want to just be a playboy? And that's all he wanted. He wanted to be living like the rock star life. He wanted to be kids on Instagram. Like, that's what he wanted. He asked his dad if he could manage his caravan park. And when I say manage, I think he'd be one of those bosses who swanned in, went, is everyone here? You're a dick. And swanned out again. And then just got a load of money off it. And his dad basically said, no, I don't trust you enough because you won't do any fucking work.
I'm liking Neville.
Yeah, Neville knows. Neville's got his shit together. So Bamber was determined that somehow he was going to have this lifestyle that he'd been dreaming of. June basically was disappointed with her children. She became more and more religious. She was like, these two fucking fuck-ups are dicking me over. They might be fit, but they're not... This is not what I was expecting.
You're very sweary today.
Fuck you!
I don't mind it personally, but it's different to normal.
Sure.
So June was disappointed.
June was not happy that these kids were not... I think she thought they were going to be angelic...
She, like, paid a lot of money for them.
Yeah, basically the perfect life.
She'd done everything to make sure that Neville's genes were not being passed on.
But I think she thought she'd, like, farmhouse, kids frolicking. Yeah.
She'd given them everything. Yeah. They'd given them everything they could to have a good life.
Christmas around the table. I think she'd spoiled them a little bit. They'd had a lot of stuff growing up, like, financially, but it's just not what she was expecting. Bamber, they said on the documentary to annoy everyone, but I'm not sure that's why he did it. He started dressing as a new romantic.
Yes.
So he started wearing makeup and wearing, like, almost like costumes.
Yeah, very adamant.
Yeah, and, like, riding around the village. And then he started going out with, or, I don't know, sleeping with a local lad. And his parents were really religious, so they were embarrassed. And he would just go around, public displays of affection. People would stare. He'd just grab in and snog him. Like, he wanted to sort of ruffle a few feathers. On the documentary, they kind of suggested this was evidence of psychopathy. Whereas, I'm not necessarily sure that's the case.
I'm almost certain that's not the case.
How dare he?
He was just busy being fabulous.
Yeah. So June had a breakdown.
Oh yeah, like, I'm the only one who can swish into a room with this amount of poise. No, Jezza can do it too.
Yeah, he was showing her up and she didn't like it.
Yeah.
So she was struggling from the stress of her family's behaviour. So she was in hospital at certain points, like, for mental health treatment, and then Sheila was in and out. So it was kind of just, they were falling apart as a family. So at this point, Bamber went out and he bought a gun. And he said to his girlfriend, who appeared out of fucking nowhere, like, I thought he was with a guy. Apparently he's got a girlfriend now anyway.
Maybe just because he's kissing people doesn't mean he's in a relationship with them too.
I think he was just having fun.
Yeah.
Like, he was
doing what he wanted.
Living his life. So he went out and bought a
gun. Killing people? Yeah, what I wanted.
Yeah, I wanted a gun, I bought one.
Done it.
Money in the bank. Done it. Done. So he went out and bought a gun, and he told his girlfriend that he was going to kill his family.
Oh, God.
This
has been a very sudden turnaround.
Yeah, he's not so fabulous anymore. Neville confided, so the dad was suspicious. He confided in a friend that he wouldn't be surprised if he died soon in an accident and that Bamba was involved.
I can't imagine a new romantic being so murderous.
Apparently so.
Like, when you're wearing a shirt that's so ruffly, like, how can you be miserable?
Shirts come off.
No, but, like, paint... I don't know. When you've got that glitter eyeshadow on, the world sparkles.
Maybe you just tore it off, leather jacket on. Right, this is a whole change of me. It's a brand new me. And I'm going to get what I want. So brace yourself, because this is not going to be pleasant. At 3:26 a.m. on August the 7th, 1986, Bamba...
looked at the clock.
Bamba phoned the police.
3:26.
Sometimes it says 3:30, but I'm going to go with the more precise option.
What happened in those 4 minutes? Let's do another episode specifically on what could or could not have happened in the 4 minutes.
So Bamba phoned the police from his father's farm, saying that Sheila had gone berserk. Those were his exact words.
Was she kissing people?
She, no.
Bloody mental.
She gone nuts. Yeah, apparently. To be fair, she'd shot the whole family.
Oh.
Apart from Jeremy.
Of course, because they were, like, in love with each other.
Yeah.
In possibly. My narrative.
In your narrative. In your turn of events. So, according to Jeremy, he had received a call from his dad saying, come to the house, Sheila's got a gun, and then he'd gone over, and then he'd phoned the police, and he was freaking out, he'd phoned from the phone. Police attended, and they found Neville, Sheila's two twin boys, who were six at this point, and June, shot dead close range. So, a horrific massacre. And Sheila was found upstairs in the bedroom with the gun against her throat, lying on the floor. Jeremy appeared distressed following the incident. He was throwing up. So the police tried to calm him down with tea and whiskey. No puppies, though.
Why are there never any puppies?
Puppies would have made it better.
Yeah, like, if you arrest me and you're like, okay, we want you to talk. No, I'm not going to say anything. I'll let you hold a puppy. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm yours.
I'll talk. So Bamba requested, following this incident, that all the carpets and the bedding be burned. And they did it.
Burn it all.
Okay.
Who wants to be bogged down with evidence?
I know.
That takes up time. We have to look at it. We have to put a case together. Like, just burn everything, and then there's no paperwork.
Look, there's a woman there holding a gun. She's got the gun. They're all dead. He's saying this. Job done. Case closed. Burn everything.
Yeah. It's like the other day, I had a really bad lesson, ripped all the pages out of the books. It never happened. Gone. Who needs to mark that? Not me, because it was a bag of crap. It's all in the bin.
Brilliant. So his family members, his cousins, became kind of suspicious. The police were like, it's done. Let's go get a coffee. Sorted. Let's go pet some puppies. It's fine. So they began investigating themselves.
I bet there are puppies as well. Because there'll be sniffer dogs, attack dogs.
Oh, yeah.
I bet the police are always going and stroking dogs.
Yeah.
Thank you. They don't tell you about it, but that is definitely going to be a police officer perk. That, like, when you've had a hard day at the office, you're like, oh, just pop down to the dog department.
Yeah.
Cuddle a dog for a minute.
So, the cousins of Bamba became suspicious about the fact that they'd said, oh, case closed, it's all done. And they were like, there's got to be more to it than this. And they thought he was weird anyway. He did wear ruffle shirts and velvet suits. It's not okay.
I feel like we might be slightly confused as to what new romantics wore.
What
like,
did new looks, romantics
wear? I don't know. Yeah. I just want to look them up.
We'll find out.
Did they wear velvet?
And so they looked around the house, which the police should have done, and they found the silencer for the gun in a cupboard in the house.
Well done, cousins.
So they took it to the police.
Is that Bamba nose? Like a bloody bloodhound.
Yeah. And they took it to the police, and it had Sheila's blood on the inside of it. So that's suggesting that someone has killed Sheila with the gun.
Put it away
and
after
then put it away.
Dead.
Now, that's important evidence. However, just to put it into a little bit of context, their cousins were living in some buildings owned by Neville.
Right.
And once Neville had died and the family had died, obviously they got passed on to Jeremy Bamber. And Jeremy Bamber had made it quite clear that he was going to sell those buildings. So it was within their interests
to get him out of the picture.
To get him out of the picture. And then after Bamber was convicted, the estate went to the cousins. So I don't know. But I mean, there's so many problems that were happening. The police hadn't secured the scene. They'd gone, yeah, everything's fine, burn the lot. So they just kind of...
It's Friday. Just get a bonfire going and forget it's ever happened.
Burn everything.
We need a work-life balance.
Yeah. This one's an open and shut case. Sorted.
There's no way we're going to get these carpets clean. Burned.
But there was one police officer who wasn't having it. He was suspicious. And he was like, you guys go to the pub, I'm doing my job. So Stan, a police officer, didn't agree with the idea that Sheila
Stan
had killed...
Stan
the man didn't agree with the idea that Sheila had killed the family. And he carried on looking into it.
Just through the ashes.
Just in his own time. Just around the house, having his dinner there, using the microwave. He decided that it was clear that Sheila hadn't done it because... She would have had to fight the family members, and it was clear that there had been a fight. Neville was covered in bruises and stuff before he was killed, and her nails weren't at all damaged. She'd have had to reload the weapon two times to have had enough bullets to kill the entire family. So he said that this was an easy cop out. Someone had blamed her, but it wasn't her. Her nails were fine. They were beautiful. They were like
model's nails.
Yeah. Beautiful.
She could have hand modelled. Like, if someone had told her that she had such beautiful nails, maybe she would have had the confidence to go out there and model again and not become a schizophrenic.
Maybe.
You could have saved Elise. Think about that. Next time you see someone with nice nails, think about what you could be doing.
So, nail modelling might be for you. So, Bamber's girlfriend came forward having been ditched by Jeremy.
Jeremy Cricket.
He's got so much money, we renamed him Jeremy. Jeremy. So basically, she was in on this, and she was like, well, I'm going to get rich too. And then once the family were dead and he inherited all the money, he was like, yeah, you're not that great.
Not enough dick for me.
He said, we're probably going to break up. And she went to the police and said, well, no, there's nothing in it for me. I'll tell you the truth.
She knew about it.
She said that he had planned the murder and she had agreed to keep quiet because of the money, but now she was going to tell the truth.
That makes she was so a terrible person.
Yeah. Like, it's all going to be okay then. Oh, fine. Well,
I was willing to let this murder slide.
Yeah, I let it happen because I thought I'd have some money, but as soon as that money was gone, I thought I'll do the honest thing and save the day.
I believe it was around the same time that he said I wasn't getting any money that Jesus came to me and told me what I should do.
So the police put Bamber under surveillance and found he was just partying all the time, spending huge amounts of money. He'd got a lot of cash following the murder, just from what was available.
Digging down the back of the sofa.
Yeah, but he was running out. And this is where it gets a little bit weird and almost reinforces your suspicions. He'd found some photos of Sheila in compromising positions. He basically found some sex photos of his sister. Now,
as soon as you said a model, I was like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Models in the 80s, please.
Well, apparently there was a cucumber involved in these pictures as well. Well,
no wonder her kids were weird. They're half cucumber.
And so he thought,
proper pair of vegetables.
rather than just hanging on to these photos for his own personal gains, he thought, there's something in this for me. So he arranged a meeting with the son and said, I've got some compromising photos of my sister.
And I'm willing... the Sun newspaper.
Yeah, the Sun. Not his son. The Sun. And I'm willing to sell you these photos, but I want cash. I want cold hard cash. I want it fast.
And if you don't, I'm going to go to Asda.
Yeah.
And see if they... To use them as like advertising. I don't know.
For cucumbers.
Smart price cucumbers.
Yeah, I mean...
See how smart they really are.
Could be like those half...
Multi-purpose cucumbers.
Who wants a half cucumber when you can have a whole one? So he met them in an old pub, double their sales. And he said...
we're never going to get sponsored by HelloFresh with this attitude.
Oh, we definitely won't get sponsored by Asda. Any vegetables will do. Doesn't have to be cucumbers.
Stay away from the butternut squash.
Don't take a marrow. Instead of going along with it and giving him the money for the photos, the reporter went back to the office and said, you'll never guess what's happened. I bet that was fun in the office. Everyone gather round. You'll never guess what Jeremy Bamber's just offered me. And they said, screw that. We're making a story out of this. Next day, headline is, Bamber tries to sell sex photos of his sister for cash. Obviously. The reporter did sound a little bit disappointed, but he never got to actually see those photos, though.
Oh, so he hadn't taken them to show
him? No, he just said, I've got them. And he's like, oh, I never got to see them, no.
Maybe they didn't exist.
Well, that's what he said. He said, maybe they didn't even have them. Bamber...
Have you Googled it?
Have I Googled Sheila Bambi cucumber photo? I have not. So Bamber, oblivious to all of this, ignoring the headlines, carried on partying. He went in on holiday to Saint-Tropez with a male friend, unaware he was being followed by police. I mean, if you've got to be following someone as a policeman, Saint-Tropez is a nice place. Obviously, you've got to be in plain clothes.
Oh, we haven't caught him yet.
Hawaiian shirt.
We just missed him at Dover.
Flower garland. Cocktail in your hand. I'm just blending in.
We're gaining on him, but it might take another week.
Yeah.
He's just one step ahead of us.
We're just in a club. So as soon as he did return to the UK, as soon as he landed in Dover, he was arrested.
Oh, so they did go to Saint-Tropez?
Yeah.
Watch him and then come back. Yeah. We'll arrest him in England.
Yeah.
Don't want to spoil the holiday.
No. We'll just let him have a good time while he's out here. He was charged with the 5 murders of his family, but he still claims to be innocent and always did. So at trial, key parts to the trial included the fact that Sheila's blood was on the inside of the silencer, Sheila's ex's testimony.
He wasn't fucking there.
I don't even know what that means. Ex who's what?
Well, she had kids. She didn't actually have kids with a cucumber.
I meant Bamber's ex's testimony.
Okay.
Should I start that bit again? No.
No, you can't. Don't joke in.
So the trial, the key parts of the trial were Sheila's blood was on the inside of the silencer, the fact that Bamber's ex had said that he had planned to commit the murders, Sheila may not be strong enough to inflict the damage, the fact her nails weren't damaged either, the fact that the father had apparently phoned Bamber during the attack, but there was no blood on the kitchen phone, despite the fact that that phone call, he would have been, and he said, I'm covered in blood, apparently, like his father had said. So Bamber was convicted. 10 people said he was guilty, to 2 said he was not guilty. Bamber's fingerprints were eventually discovered on the gun as well, and a Bible by Sheila's body. And they were missed during the initial inquiries as well. I don't know what they were doing. I mean, come on. They just seemed to go...
They obviously just thought it was obvious.
It's all fine. Take a few photos. Job done. There are people who still believe that Bamber is innocent. Apparently there is a photo of Sheila's body, and the timing of how much she bled apparently suggests that he was already in custody and then he must be innocent. But I didn't really understand that. And there was also a photo of a letter in a Bible, and there were a lot of people saying that could have been her suicide note, and then apparently the Bible was destroyed, so that evidence was gone. But I think just having a bit of paper sticking out of a Bible, I mean, lots of people write notes in Bibles, they were devout Christians, it's not necessarily going to be a suicide note just because it's got writing on it.
Bookmark.
Yeah. Bamber has never admitted to the murder, and he's now serving life without parole, just like Dennis Nielsen. So he's still in prison now.
I'm going to be doing Samuel Dougal.
Sounds like a character from The Magic Roundabout.
It definitely does. This story comes from the book Murders from the Black Museum. So Samuel Dougal, in 1899, murdered a wealthy heiress, Miss Camille Cecile Holland.
She sounds very wealthy.
She does sound fabulous, doesn't she? She was brought up in India to a French mother, and like her dad was an English merchant, and then she was sent to England to live in a boarding school. Oh. It's all like The Little Princess,
yeah.
That book. Very romantic. But Samuel Dougal is described in the book by Gordon Honeycomb as being a ruthless, amoral, and utterly engaging beast.
Oh, how engaging.
I know, that does sound a little bit like he's attractive, like, oh, you're such an engaging beast.
So, lovable rogue.
Beast! As Alyssa would say. Alyssa Edwards, for those fans out there. So he basically just used his like natural skills to attract and exploit women for his enjoyment and profit. So he was born in East London in 1846. And he was just educated and grew up without incident, pretty much. And then became an apprentice at a civil engineering office.
Yeah.
But he was bored with what he felt was just, like, office work, like, humdrum. So he would party hard. And his partying meant that he ran up debts. And when his father grew tired of this, Samuel Dougal went to join the army.
Like, I don't get how people used to run up debts all the time. Like, who was letting them just drink for free? Like, oh, you can just owe us.
Everything's on a tab, on credit.
Yeah, you can go home without paying. You can just owe us.
Even, like...
Like, those were the days.
The bank notes wouldn't be a bank note as we know it. It would be actually be, like, a piece of paper saying, I give you this much money, and then they would take it to the bank with the person, and it was just literally the person's signature that sort of like validated the money. Like, it wasn't like currency that everyone had. The bank gave you these notes that you would sign and write, like checks, I suppose, but there was no money actually given until you took them. So I think that's how they got away with it, a few bits. So he was in the Royal Engineers for 21 years.
Wow.
So he had a long... Again, not two murders this week. Not our usual serial killers. They weren't depraved from the beginning. He
blows to the head.
No, he held down his job and he left in 1887 with good descriptions of his character. They said he was a very good clerk.
Well,
that's about as high as the praise gets. So I imagine he was a bit of a dullard.
I know, I was going to say, it sounds pretty boring. He was a good clerk.
That's
nothing
it.
Exceptional.
21 years he worked there.
He made a lovely cup of tea.
Well, that would be better. I'd be impressed by that.
He wrote down all the figures in all the right columns. Good job.
But part of the reason maybe why he was so boring at work is because he was just bloody knackered. Because his personal life was a lot more up and down. So at 23...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
He married Miss Griffiths and he had 4 children with her. But he was a heavy drinker and an abusive husband.
Lovely.
They managed to last 16 years with having 4 kids around and him drinking and beating her.
Oh, God.
But she then had a sudden and agonising illness took hold of her and she died within 12 hours of getting ill. So 8. Then 2 months later, in 1885, he had a new wife. This is in Nova Scotia, by the way, where they were living. But she was also suddenly taken ill and died within the day. So both of those women are now buried in Halifax, Nova Scotia. They were both buried within 24 hours of the death. So really quick turnaround. And because they died in the military quarters, there's no requirement to register their deaths on the registry. So no inquiries. If someone dies, because it's the army, they assume if someone's died, like, oh, it's been as a part of... So because it was in military quarters, no
this
need to register it.
This makes me suspicious.
Me also.
Mm. Me as well.
And me. All of us here.
all 24 of us think it's weird.
In 1887, he left and returned back to England, bringing with him another girl from Halifax who was posing as his wife. And she'd had a baby, but again, because he's abusive, she was like, done with that, and she went back to Nova Scotia and told everyone she was widowed.
Well done. Good girl. Just, yeah, don't let your boyfriend. Tell everyone he died.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to say otherwise? Yeah, he's dead.
That's the good thing about just moving countries, like...
Yeah, he's dead.
I'm back and he's not here. So... What are you going to do about it?
Yep.
Can't look him up on Facebook.
We probably were married, but now we're not, so he's dead.
He's dead to me.
Yeah.
So while back in England, he just started to rack up the points on the CV. He worked as a salesman, a shopkeeper, a pub landlord, a surveyor, back to clerking. Okay. He just did everything. Really.
Badly, I assume. Like, you can't be good. You can't be good and trained at all those things.
Definitely not. He started. He had a long string of flings and love affairs. He had another 2 children with a widow who then left him because of the abuse. Kel Surprise. And then...
I'm glad she left. That she didn't just tolerate it for 16 years and then die after 12 hours.
Yeah, brilliant. But this is now woman number 4 that's dealt with it. Start telling the police and maybe you wouldn't keep abusing people.
It should be... no more wives. It should be a rule.
Yeah, you're not allowed women anymore.
No.
But he did. So when he ran a pub, it was using the money of an elderly woman who he sort of... courted.
Oh no.
Who would charm these women and get them to
sugar mommy.
Yeah, pretty much. This one it doesn't seem that he had a relationship with, but she was like, you know, asked for investments, asked to be patronized by them.
Patronize us.
But the pub burnt down.
Oh. Insurance?
Well, he tried. He went to try and get insurance and they instead said, we're going to arrest you.
Okay. That ended badly.
And it did go to trial, but he was acquitted for it. There was no actual evidence other than the fact that he was a bit of a shady character and it was then disappeared.
Yeah.
So he moved to the happiest place on earth.
Latvia.
Dublin.
Oh.
Is my favourite. And there he married a young lady. So his third wife now. Called Sarah White. So this was in 1892. He's already 46 years old.
Which I was going to say, how old is he getting?
Which by Victorian standards is...
He's lived a life. He's done everything. He's married, 5 women by now?
Well, he's married 3 because one of the widows that he had another 2 children with, he wasn't married to. And the girl that he brought over to England, he didn't marry either.
Yeah.
Who he had a child with. So it's more the children he's getting. So he had 2 more children with Sarah White. I'm not even keeping count. Like, no. This is definitely where Philpott was getting his inspiration from.
Yeah.
Just keep banging them out. So then 2 years later, he was living in London. He was still married, but he was there alone. Sarah was still in Dublin.
For a change.
And he was looking for company. He just gets lonely.
So it's like, wife's away, the cats will play.
I think, well, it could be that he loves women, or it could be that he just likes chilled babies. Like, once they get to three, he's like, oh, done with this family.
Like a new puppy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the dog's old now.
Puppy! So this young lady, best name so far, Emily Booty.
Yeah, she does.
That made no sense. But... So Emily Booty and Dougal, they leased a house in Oxfordshire together with her money, and she furnished it for him, but didn't move in with him. Oh no, she did move, sorry. They leased a house together in Oxfordshire.
I mean, it sounds like the beginnings of a sitcom, like Booty and Dougal. You've got a big bottom girl, stringy, lanky guy, and they're going around having shenanigans. Like, it sounds like a ye olde sitcom.
Except the plot twist is that he moved in with his wife and kids.
Yeah.
So they're all living there together in this really weird setup.
Shenanigans will ensue.
Don't know about shenanigans, but definitely some punching. Because, of course, Dougal is charming at first and then winds up being a massive knobhead.
Yeah.
So Booty, being a bit, having quite a strong character, decided to leave him. And when she tried to leave, that's when he became the most aggressive to her and threatened her. So she went straight to the police. The police came, and because they'd been packing up and putting their stuff in boxes, they searched his boxes and they found some of Emily Booty's possessions. And so he was charged with larceny. I mean, they were looking for an excuse, because the possessions that they found in his boxes were some tea towels and a bit of lace or something. So he wasn't really stealing, like, major stuff. I think it was probably by accident. But that says something about the fact that he can't be charged with the threats of violence. So they'll have to be like, we'll charge you with the tea towels, though.
Yeah.
But he was... he did go to court for that in 1895 and defended himself and just wowed them all. He razzle-dazzled them and he was acquitted again.
That's the way to do it.
However, in January 1896, he was charged with another crime, this time for forging the signature of Lord Frankfort whilst in Dublin. So he was sentenced to 12 months hard labour, and he served this out at the Cainhill Lunatic Asylum.
Oh, God.
He'd originally been sent to Pentonville Prison, but had tried to hang himself, so they'd said. He was obviously suffering from a depression and sent into the lunatic asylum.
So he forges one signature and he's got to work for no money for 12 months.
Yes.
I mean, the students I've got trying to get out of gym, they get nothing.
I think it's the fact that it was a Lord Frankfort that he's signed
messed with the wrong
got
guy.
Some power behind him. So then he was at age 50 now, discharged and pronounced sane, but because he'd been to prison now, he'd lost his army pension, so he's desperate for money now. He's got no pension. He's obviously now he's a convicted criminal, and again, for Victorian standards, pretty old.
Yeah.
So he's struggling to find work. During this time, Mrs. Dougal, the actual wife, came back from Dublin with
drunk
kids, and then left him again. I don't know why she thought it'd be different this time.
Well, we'll give it one more go. No, still do.
Of course he fucking is. So again, his plan B was to find a wealthy woman to support him. And this led him to Miss Holland, you mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah.
So in September 1898 is when they met. And there's two accounts of this meeting. One version is that they met at an exhibition at Earl's Court. The other is that they met through a dating introduction agency.
They had them!
Yeah.
Plenty of
but
fish.
They were probably like you filled out a little card. It was an introductions agency and they would contact you with someone.
Swipe the card to the right if you don't like them. Swipe the card to the left if you think they're alright.
The fact that there's the two accounts makes me believe that the introductions agency must be the true one.
Yeah.
Because if you met at Earl's Court, there'd be no debate about it. That's what happened. But at the time, people would have been a bit ashamed of it's having like to use an introduction agency.
When I told my mum that we met at the pub through a friend, and she was like, which friend was it? And I had to make up a really long story. And eventually I was like, no, we met online. And she was like, oh, okay.
So Miss Holland, like I said, from a wealthy family, she'd inherited a fortune of £6,000 on the death of her aunt, as well as all of her possessions. And it said that she flowered at 50. She was middle-aged too. But she was
grotesque. She opened her flower at 50.
She didn't open her flower. She bloomed.
Shared her flower with the world.
She didn't share her flower. She just was rosy-cheeked.
Her flower was opening.
No, it wasn't. It very definitely wasn't open. She would dress well. And she would wear a lot of makeup. She dyed her hair red. I mean, she sounds a bit like Queen Elizabeth I. Very accomplished. Play, sing, paint. And was Catholic. And it's believed that she was a virgin. And like up until that point, she wasn't playing about. She'd been in love as a young girl with a boy who went away into the Navy. And he drowned at sea.
Aww.
And she still wore his ring and saved herself from then.
She stood at the window staring out into the ocean calling his name
night. I mean, there's a lot of this that is very much Victorian romance novel.
It's like Titanic. But he didn't die. No, he did die. It's not like Titanic.
No. There's just water involved.
It's drowned.
It's like Jaws.
Yeah. It's just like Jaws.
It's like Waterworld.
I love Waterworld.
So they began courting. They even went for a little mini break in Southend together.
Ooh.
But she'd confessed to her dressmaker that she'd broken it off because she knew that he only wanted her for her money. So said she was leaving him, like it was done. But apparently he'd said... tried to convince her to put all of her money into investments, but in his name, so that he could look after them.
Oh, of course he did.
And she wasn't that stupid, so put him in his place. But clearly Dougal was like, I've put the hours in, I'm going to get some rewards from this. So he must have said the right thing and convinced her, no, I do like you, I do want you, because they went ahead with plans to rent a house for them to live in, using her money, of course. Mm. In 1899, so it's now coming to the year of the event, they bought a farm and Dougal sorted it all with the estate agent and had it put completely in his name, this moat house farm. Holland saw it, destroyed the contract and had it made up again in her name. So she's thwarting him. And obviously infuriating him. So she's the only one that we've got evidence for that he actually killed, though he was abusive. Possibly because she was making life so difficult for him. But at the same time, as much as she's smart and aware...
She's still going... Like, she's like, oh, he's put this in his name, so clearly he wants to take my money. But he still clearly loves me and I will move in with him. I've put in this much effort. I don't want to go back on it now.
I'm already 50. I'm not going to find love again. I'm especially not going to find a handlebar moustache quite like this.
Yeah. I've already put my name down for new house presents. It would just be embarrassing.
Exactly. So they posed as a married couple and they stayed at a nearby like boarding house type thing while they were finalising all the details. But everyone knew that Miss Holland was not really his wife.
Yeah.
It was just... a bit of a facade, really. But they liked her, and she was seen her out about with her little dog, Jacko, and...
Jacko.
So, like, a lot of the locals, like, got chatting to her and liked her and made friends with her. And they thought that they were devoted to each other, Dougal and Holland, despite the fact that he would often go away on business trips to London and have to sleep overnight.
I bet he did.
Of course he did. So, 27th of April... of that year, they left the boarding house and moved into the property. This would only be 3 weeks before he would actually commit his worst crime. So Moat House Farm is literally surrounded by like a wide moat and you have to access it with a bridge. The nearest house is half a mile away, so really isolated and secluded. They'd hired two maids Miss Holland had while she was there. The first one she'd already worked with and knew, but she left within a week.
And then the second one, Florence left the day after Miss Holland disappeared. Like, literally nobody wanted to stay in that house with Dougal.
Yeah.
Like, he was that creepy that, like, I don't know where Miss Holland's gone. She's disappeared, but I am not staying here on my own.
I think it was, like, Fawlty Towers. He's just like, ooh, I just fell into you. And, like, touching their bums in, like, a...
He didn't even care about the pretense. So, in court, Florence told them about how Dougal had come up to her room on the very first morning that she stayed there and just forced himself on her and kissed her on the mouth. So Florence immediately went and complained to Miss Holland, who just broke down and begged her to stay with her, like couldn't bear to have another maid leave and be left with Dougal on her own. So two nights later, Dougal then tried to force the bolted door into Florence's room. And she was so panicked that he was going to get in, Florence began screaming for Miss Holland, who then came and got her and took her into bed with her, and they shared a bed then. The next day, Miss Holland again burst into tears and like begged her to stay with her. So they would continue. So she did stay, but they continued most nights. They would sleep in the same bed together to sort of keep each other company and keep safe.
Sounds like a barrel of laughs, doesn't it?
Definitely. So the 19th of May, Miss Holland said that she was going to go into town, and Florence was like, yeah, that's fine, but you'd better fucking take him with you. He's not staying with me. And that's the last time that she saw her.
Aww.
So they'd gone into town and there was no sign of either of them until after dark when Dougal returned back to the house on his own. He said that Miss Holland had gone to London, but he was going to meet her from the train later. So he went out later on to meet her at 10 o'clock for about half an hour and then came back on his own still. Oh, she wasn't there. I'll just check the next train. So waited a bit, then went out again. Half an hour later came back. Oh, she wasn't on it. She must have got the midnight train. Went out again, came back, still wasn't there. I mean, we mentioned this before about not having mobile phones. If someone's not there, what do you do? Like, people are just popping down to the train station all day hoping they'd be getting off.
I guess you would. And also, like, people wouldn't be that specific as well. They'd be like, I'll be on the train later.
And I think you would have to, like, to be specific, though. You'd have to say, I'm getting the 7 o'clock train, and if you miss it, fuck.
Come back all the time for all the other trains.
Oh. Well, it's like the film, Brief Encounters. That's how they... Because she gets the same train every day. And I know. So, every week. That's not important.
Every week! Did I say every day? I'm ashamed and embarrassed.
I mean, the research of the murders, meh, but my film knowledge must be exact. So that night, Florence stayed up all night. She didn't get undressed or go to bed. She was just stayed at the window, like, waiting for Miss Holland, like, terrified that Dougal was going to come in and get her this night. And in the morning, she refused to come out of the room to wake up and do her chores. She waited until workmen had arrived and then went down. And her mother had been already sent to come and pick her up. Like, she'd already written a note to her the day before.
You're in trouble. Mom, can you come pick me up?
Yeah.
Stuff's getting weird.
I mean, Mum came and gave Dougal what for, apparently. Told him that she thought it was weird. But as soon as they'd left, Dougal then sent a telegram to the real Mrs. Dougal back in Dublin.
House is free. I've got a free house.
Pretty much, to come and join him. Their relationship seems the weirdest of this. Because she keeps leaving him, and he keeps getting with all these women, yet he still brings her back.
It's like Tom Jones.
There's something about them that's odd. So she moved into the house with his daughter, and he introduced her to the people in the neighbourhood as his daughter, who's been widowed, because obviously they knew Miss Holland was supposed to be his wife.
Where's your wife?
But they just got...
Why snogging your daughter, mate?
Exactly. Eventually, they just got careless. His wife, Missy Dougal, would start wearing Miss Holland's clothes and jewellery.
That's not careless. That's weird.
And everyone sort of guessed.
What, accidentally put on her clothes?
Yeah, the rumours went round and everyone sort of knew.
Yeah.
They said that Miss Holland had gone away yachting. I mean, how long can you be on a yacht for? For me, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Her dog, Jacko, Miss Holland's dog, actually travelled the 6 miles back to the boarding house where they'd stayed. Obviously looking... I felt that's such a sad little thing.
That's the best bit.
He'd gone back to the boarding house. That obviously left the home. His mistress wasn't there.
Her husband's disloyal. She's never had a mum before. That dog is her real soulmate.
Loved her.
That dog loves her properly.
So the landlady, who'd made friends with Miss Holland while they'd been staying there, she recognised the dog immediately and sent for someone to come and collect him. Obviously, it was Dougal that came. And she was asking, like, oh, you know, how's Camille? Like, and he just ignored her. It was like, give me the dog. I'm going. Like, totally brushed her off. So over the next 2 years, he managed to acquire all of Miss Holland's money by just forging her signature on checks and letters, and eventually had everything that she'd owned. And he just started then living the life of the country gentleman, like going out shooting. Like, he bought one of the first cars in that area. And just non-stop shagging. Like, he had kids by... He'd just hire a servant girl, shag her till she was pregnant, and then she had to leave to go and have the baby, start work on the next one.
Oh, God.
There was rumours that he was teaching girls to ride bikes, but they had to do it naked.
Oh, and there was also, that's very Euro trash.
There's also a rumour that at one point he was pleasuring three sisters and their mother, which sounds like the sort of weird thing that a newspaper comes up with after the event.
Yeah.
But there was a sister thing later, so not totally out of nowhere.
So if you live in that area, there's probably like a 10% chance that you're...
If you live in that area, you're his fucking child.
Yeah.
There's going to be so many people that are now the children, the grandchildren of him. He's responsible for the entire inbreeding of Norfolk.
Pretty much.
That's where that rumour comes from. Yeah. They're not in Norfolk, I don't know. So 1902 now, Mrs. Dougal fucked off again, the flighty so-and-so.
Back to the roundabout.
This time she ran off with an engine driver. I mean, it is so just Downton Abbey.
He's engine driving the roundabout. Off she goes.
So she started putting divorce things in motion. And then in September of that year, he had a servant at the time, an 18-year-old Kate Cranwell, who left to go and have a baby again. But she filed a paternity suit, which Dougal contested.
How old is he now as well? Come on.
In his 50s. He's getting into his like early 50s. But this was the problem. Because he'd contested this paternity suit, this brought him to the attention of the local law enforcement. Like, if he'd have just said, yeah, it's mine, job done. But now he's getting known to people. And they started to question, wait, didn't you have a wife? Where is she?
And how are you so fertile?
He said that she'd left to go abroad, but yet all of her possessions were in the house. So she'd obviously disappeared. And a police officer, PC Drew, started to open an investigation into her whereabouts. So a cheque, allegedly signed by Camille Holland, they were showing them to her nephew.
Yeah.
And he said, this is not her. Like, because Dougal's defence was, look, she's been signing cheques, like, she's alive.
Yeah, she must be around here somewhere.
Her nephew was like, these are definitely not hers, it's a forgery. So Dougal then was, like, trying to flee. He went away on a jolly with the sister of Kate Cranwell, who had started the paternity suit, Georgia Cranwell, who was also pregnant with his child. Like, literally, he's fathered a county.
Yeah.
This is insane. So she was also pregnant. They went off to the seaside. And then when they came back, they went to London, and Dougal went to the Bank of England with some £10 notes to get them changed into smaller amounts. And the numbers on some of the notes had been stopped, because obviously they didn't want Camille's money being spent. So they detained him in the offices while the police arrived. The police showed up, said, are you Samuel Dougal? And he was like, yeah, you've got me. So they calmly walked out. They didn't put handcuffs on him or anything, and they just walked out together. As soon as they got out of the building, he tried to run off. He was overweight. I mean, his balls are dried up by now. And he tried to run, and he ran into a cul-de-sac, which I love. This is why they invented cul-de-sacs. He ran into a cul-de-sac, so he was basically just trapped and captured.
It's a good job it wasn't those ones with the little twitchel at the end that you can sneak through.
Exactly. When they searched him upon arrest, they found that he was carrying loads of women's jewellery, including the ring that Miss Holland always wore from her lover that was drowned.
Oh, that's the sad bit.
So that was the day that they began searching for her body.
Heart of the ocean.
So they went to Moat House Farm. They drained the moat, thinking that's the obvious place to put it, and started digging. They were there for 5 weeks.
I mean, that's effort.
They did not give up. They were like, there's no way he would have taken the body anywhere else.
It must be here.
So 5 weeks, they set up home, basically. They just moved in, the police. And then a local person mentioned that there used to be a drainage ditch that had been filled in not long after Samuel Dougal had moved in.
Could have said that 5 weeks ago.
Exactly. So they began opening up, and in there they found the fully clothed corpse of Miss Holland.
Aww.
Partly skeletal, where it had been exposed, and partly preserved, where he'd covered it with blackthorn branches before the ditch had been filled in. So sort of composted around her. She was identified by her clothes. That's an advert for bespoke tailoring. Or just writing your name in it with a Sharpie.
Yeah.
And they found that she'd been shot at close range in the head because the bullet was in her skull. And it matched the bullet in Dougal's gun.
Yeah.
Pretty open and shut. And they said that the way the shot had been done was from someone who was higher up than the person down below, so like him in a carriage and her stood at the side of it. So Dougal was charged on April in 1903 in the dining room of the farm, whilst the inquest was being held at the same time in the barn on the grounds. And very rural police work happening. He pled not guilty, but this time he gave no evidence, and the jury took...
Just didn't do it.
Yeah. Didn't do it.
Not saying why, I just didn't do it.
I think the council obviously realised you've got no good excuse, it's best to say nothing. So it took them 75 minutes to convict him, and he was sentenced to death. He did try to appeal it, and he gave his story of how he'd shot her by accident. So because she was down and he was up, he said, well, she got out of the carriage and she was facing away from me because she was looking at how bright the moon was. I was taking that time to unload my revolver. And while I was unloading it, it accidentally exploded. Mm. I mean, you think he was unloading it, the bullet, what's it called, the barrel?
Yeah.
Is it the thing that's got the little bullets in? Shouldn't it have been...
I don't know.
That's not the barrel.
Some American will correct us anyway.
Yeah. Text files, can you just let us know about the bits of a gun? The bit with the chamber. The chamber with the bullets in.
So then I buried her body.
Well, so... it goes on. So then he said, well, I panicked. So I went in and I told the maid that she'd gone. Went back out.
Gave her a quick shag while I was at it.
Yeah. He went back out and felt her pulse and said she's still alive. So I thought, right, if I carry her body up to the fields where there's a nice cool breeze, she'll probably be revived.
That's the stupidest bit. That's the least... Like, just say she died. No, I thought I'd carry her up where the breeze might revive her.
Yep. After she'd been shot. That's what she needs. Fresh air.
Blow the pulse back into... Blow her heart to stop
it. I mean, that is what I do whenever the kids say they feel sick. I'm like, well, go out for play.
Go out in the field.
Get some fresh air. You'll feel better.
Just blow the bullet out of her head and it'll all be well.
So then he realised that she'd died. So he was carrying her back. And as he was carrying her back, he noticed the ditch and thought, well, I'll just put her down here for now.
Oh, she's quite heavy.
Pretty much. Went back in, spoke to Florence again. These are like the times when he said he was going to the train station. He was carrying the body around. Went back in. Then he came out and saw she was sort of settled where she was. So he kissed...
She looked comfy.
Yeah, so he kissed her and he covered her up with the branches.
She was settled.
So that the chickens wouldn't peck at her is what he said. But obviously it's because the workman was coming the next day to fill in the ditch. So he was trying to hide the body a little bit before the workmen fell in. And then he said the next morning they began filling in the ditch on top of her.
Whoops.
So I just let them carry on.
Oh, it just happened. Circumstantial.
Yeah.
So he was hanged on the 8th of July in 1903. He was aged 57 at this point.
I mean, how long did he have left anyway, really?
Exactly. And he was hung by... The executioner was William Billington, which I liked, because obviously everyone called him Billy Billington.
Of course.
A lovely name. And there was a bit of drama at the execution, because the chaplain of the prison apparently had been speaking to him before, and he promised that he was going to confess at the last minute so his soul could be saved, and he hadn't. So the chaplain burst into the area where the gallows were and shouted, "Are you guilty? Tell me now! Are you guilty?"
Because that's how you get people to tell you the truth. You just scream in their face. Yeah. And they go, "Oh, yes, I'm sorry."
And apparently, just before it happened, he said, "Yes, I am." The last little snippet I have of the story, Jacko then was taken back to the landlady of the boarding house.
This is a real story. This is what we all want to know.
He looked after him until he died a year later.
Of heartbreak.
No. AIDS. No. She looked after him until he died a year later, and then she had him stuffed and kept him in a glass case in her living room.
Where he is to this day.
Quite possibly. Unless he accidentally fell in a ditch and someone started to cover it up. So she was like, "No, okay then.
He looks comfy.
Leave him." So that's the end of episode 15 of Slaughter. Thanks to everybody that has left reviews and subscribed to us. And if you haven't yet subscribed or left a review,
do it now.
Yes. But we'd just like to mention a few people that have helped us out this month. So, in the public toilets, peering through the glory hole, is Holly Andrew.
And in the alleyway with the cheese grater, we've got Maggie Dobsh. I always get stuck with this name. Maggie Dobsh. I can't say it, Maggie. I'm sorry. Maggie.
In the garage with that darned blowpoke is Rebecca Pope.
In the conservatory with the blowtorch, we've got Hannah Mabry.
In the pantry with the sander was Lorna Violet.
And in the cellar with the slinky was Sandra Teeling. Thanks for contributing on Patreon, guys. It really does mean a lot to us. And it's really, really kind of you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.